Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013. And we're also part of the Strange Society Podcast Network. You can find them at StrangePodNet on Twitter for all your horror podcasting needs. I am Johnny Numb, and joining me, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
And I hesitated for a second there because it's been a while since Billy and I have recorded a show.
I know. People thought there was drama and shit going on. What happened? You guys doing shows anymore? I don't understand. Where are you? Where's Johnny now? Help me. It was awesome.
Yeah, I took a trip to, you know, I did what Jazz Coleman from Killing Joke sometimes does, and he just travels to another country and doesn't tell anybody, and then he just comes back and is like, yeah, I was off in another country.
Shit, that's a horror movie in the making, man.
Jazz Coleman in the jungle.
Yeah, Green Inferno 2 or Hostel 5.
I could see Jazz Coleman actually being the head of the cannibal tribe more so than the guy in danger.
But... Oh, yeah, I could see. You're going to die, fucker! We hate you! Oh, man, I've seen him flip the fuck out at a show, man. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
The sound guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, the sound guy couldn't get... This was at Maxwell's in Hoboken long before Maxwell shut down. Gosh, I was married to my first wife, and he was hitting on her and all this stuff. And Killing Joke was amazing. And he kept telling the sound engineer, hey, man, do it this way. And the guy didn't. And during one song, they lost everything. And Maxwell's is the size of a shoebox. There's like a million people packed in like sardines. We're sweating. There's no oxygen. And he's like, I'm going to kill you, fucker. I told you. And we all look back at the sound engineer. We're like, yeah. And the sound guy's like, whatever. You know, he just didn't give a shit. Sorry.
No, I think the sound guy figured, you know what? I can probably be out of here a lot faster than Jazz Coleman can get to me. So whatever, man.
Yeah, I think it was like, oh, again, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But they were amazing live, man.
When was that, Bill?
That was like 88, 89. And that's the show where I almost got in a fight, man. These stupid scumbag skinheads were, you know, forming a wall, you know, connecting their arms and spearing people. And at Maxwell's, the stage comes right up to your knees. And so this one beautiful, beautiful woman, I used to see her and her girlfriend. They looked like twin sisters at shows all the time. They were very expressive in their love and everything else. So he spears the one in the back. And I'm standing next to this guy who looks like fucking Robert Smith from The Cure. And he's got an umbrella because it was raining. So he picks up his umbrella and I got my fists up because I'm like, this guy, we're taking this guy out. So we both make a move, and the woman who got hit, her lover comes over, spins the guy around, punches him right in the nose. His nose explodes and he like, you know, like all like, you know, those fucking pussy ass, you know, skinheads are. You know, yeah, he turned, he ran, and all five of them ran out. All those dirtbags.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I like that.
That was a great show, man. I miss Maxwell's.
I've seen Killing Joke, but it's been like much more recent, obviously. You know, probably within the last 10 years, I've seen him twice, and unfortunately, Jazz Coleman didn't flip out either time. So, you know,
he's mellowing with age, man. He's becoming a fine wine.
Yeah, since the music's still great though, so I enjoy what they're putting out still. So, but in any case, we digress rapidly, and
show's over. We used to
Yeah, do you remember that time? Yeah, the Last Knock talked about Killing Joke. Yeah,
Killing Joke episode, and we're out.
Yeah, that could be. Mm-hmm. But Billy informed me before we started recording that tonight is another hodgepodge episode. It's our 15th since we started this show.
And it's super popular. It's like our most popular thing. We should do a hodgepodge show every month.
You know what, Bill? I was going to say, we could probably do that because we're continuously watching new stuff or new stuff that's new to us anyway. So
yeah, and that's what I did here. I have new, I have old, but they're all weird. Oh, yeah. They're all, I guess my theme tonight is like everything's a little off.
It's an eclectic mix. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay, Bill, on that note, do you want to get started with something you've watched recently? Or I don't know, it's been probably like 6 or 7 months since we last recorded one of these shows.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, yeah, actually these are all recent for me. Some of them are strange in regards to it's like I'm not sure how much I actually love them. But I want to start off with one that I know you're familiar with. It's the horror comedy starring the lovely and vivacious Angela Bettis, and that's 12 Hour Shift from 2020.
What did you think of that one?
I loved it. I really got into it. I thought it was a blast. It was weird, offbeat. David Arquette's in it, and then I find out he's an executive producer on the gig. It was written and directed by Brie Grant, and the characters were cool. The weirdness of it, I really enjoyed. It's funny because it wasn't like super laugh funny kind of thing. It was more like this isn't right funny, which I appreciated. So don't think it's going to be some slapstick thing. It's not. It's more like, man, this is really, really wrong. And if it actually happened, it would be really, really bad. What was going on in there? And Chloe Farnworth, Fanworth was freaking awesome in it. Julian Dowler, all of them, man. Nakia Gamby Turner. I mean, they were just everybody was such a blast, and it was really cool. And Angela Bettis is always perfect. She is just always perfect. She always fits the role she's playing. She makes it her own. And just the little touches that she does with facial expressions alone and body language in general is just fantastic. And it's the type of the movie where when it's over, you're like, it's like the place would be surrounded by like law enforcement and it's like TV cameras. And she's just like, it's just like way out of the norm. So if you want to watch something that's beautifully shot, the cinematography was done by Matt Glass, who did just a really great job in capturing the coolness of it. Because hospitals are dull, and most like all the footage takes place within a hospital. But he did a great job with different angles, and it didn't seem sterile at all, which was really cool. In fact, it almost had like it's almost like when they were done and it was colored, it's like they cranked down on the color a little bit to keep it a little like dark in spots. Like there was a lot of contrast, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I got that feeling too, Bill, when I watched it.
Yes, yeah, so did you like it, or did you have issues with it, or?
You know, Bill, I liked it. I didn't love it.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5 because I was like, it's not, I can't give it a 3. I couldn't give it a 4, but.
I was kind of, I think maybe this might have been part of it, was I was I'd heard about it on the festival circuit, and I'd heard about some buzz around it. So I think I might have had some extra anticipation going in
Gotcha.
that maybe went unmet, which might not have been fair to the movie itself. So I was at a, I picked it up off picked it up the other day, so I'll watch it again because I was like, I love Angela Bettis. I think she gives a great performance in this movie, and it's a little different, I think, than what we've typically seen her play to in a certain way. I mean, she's good at playing weird characters, but this character is kind of weird for like, but it's like very realistic the way she's weird. She's like she's like a very run down, I'd almost say white trashy kind of character in this film, but she's got these little like little smart things going on, you know, in her brain, like, oh, I'm going to do this to try and make some extra money on the side, you know, and it's worked well so far. Why wouldn't it continue to work, you know? But and she what grinds up what is it pills to keep awake during her shifts or whatever, and she snorts stuff. You know, I really like that little those little like oh, this is kind of this is not good kind of stuff that she does in this movie, and so I really Yeah, go ahead.
No, the question, like, her amorality, she was so, like, bored and dulled out, she wasn't even, like, questioning herself, and that was scary shit right there.
Yeah, it's like, that's a good point, though. It was kind of like she was just kind of coasting through this existence, you know, to the point where the stuff that, like, people like us would be like, oh, wow, that's kind of a bit much. To her, it's like, it's just another day, you know, wandering the halls of the hospital doing this job and this thing on the side. So that was pretty cool. So, I mean, I picked it up for her performance, and I think I'll definitely watch it again at some point and maybe be able to click with the rhythm a bit better than I did the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. I like how you said rhythm, that, cause it was a little off, and I have no problem with that. I just watched Under the Silver Lake last night, and that rhythm is off. And it would. And
oh God, yeah.
Yeah, and it fits the film. It fits the film. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool, Bill. Yeah, I'm glad you finally got around to seeing that, because I was curious as to what your thoughts on that would be. So that's cool.
All right. Well, now you know, Johnny.
Oh, now I know. And no one's half the battle.
Yeah. Consider yourself a winner.
don't sue me, Hasbro. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Come at me, Hasbro.
Bring it.
Well, you know, Bill, the movie I'm going to bring up first, and maybe I'm bringing up first, is because it has some special significance. Because near the end of February, I went to get snipped, and I got a vasectomy. Hey, everybody, now you know.
Keep sharing, Johnny. Just keep sharing.
All those letters I've been getting from people asking if I'll have their babies, you know the answer now. So
come to me. I'm available. Sorry, go ahead.
I did it for you, Bill, actually. So.
Thanks, man. I need the love. I need a lot of love.
But while my feet were propped up and I had an ice pack down there, it was the perfect week, 3 days to just, like, sit.
As soon as I said my legs were, I imagine you would stir up some, I almost spit all over the friggin' computer. Go ahead. Holy shit.
Actually, I think I got some of that spit in my eye, Bill. That's good. In any case, this is a movie I watched while I was recovering from my vasectomy, and I was surprised actually at how good this movie was. It's from 1980. It's called The Unseen.
I think I saw that.
Okay. Well, how could you have seen it, Bill? It's The Unseen.
Maybe I unsaw it. No idea.
Well, in any case, this movie kind of had a troubled history, I guess, getting to the screen. And the screenplay had some involvement from Kim Henkel, who worked on the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So this film is kind of like, I would put it within the same kind of world that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is in. So if you like that film, and most people I know do, except Billy. So
call me out. Great.
But it's just this interesting movie, Old House, reporter trio headed by Barbara Bach. She's a reporter. She's beautiful. And her two crew members are in this, like, small town to cover this festival that's going on. But something goes wrong with their hotel reservation, and they stop by this weird sort of historical building run by Sidney Lassick, who, you know, the character actor from so many movies, probably best known as the English teacher from Carrie. You know, he's kind of in this weird museum. I mean, it's a hotel, but it's actually a museum. And he's like, I'm sorry, this isn't a functioning hotel, but hey, you know, we have a couple of rooms. I have a couple of rooms at my residence. Why don't you guys stay there? So, you know, you can imagine kind of what transpires in a sense from there. But the film is interesting because it has that same sort of Tobe Hooper-ish craziness to it. Like, Sidney Lassick, who is kind of in the, he's kind of like the second lead in the film next to Barbara Bach. So he has a lot of screen time, unlike a lot of the other movies he's been in where he's just more of a bit player. And it's just really, you know, there's a lot of atmosphere in the house. And you really don't know what's going on at first. Like there's strange happenings, but you know, true to the title, you don't see who's doing what, you know, really. You just know that like the tone is that there's something really off. There's something really wrong. And, yeah, this film really kind of gripped me. Maybe because it built this sense of mystery. And then it kind of led into this really strong third act where it didn't go where I quite expected it to. But I was on the hook the whole time. It's got a definite atmosphere. It's really well shot. I'm looking at the Blu-ray, but it doesn't have the cinematographer, unfortunately.
I got that for you. Roberto A. Cazeda.
Oh, okay. Well, he did a great job. And it's kind of interesting because
he did Phantasm, man. He was he was a cameraman on Phantasm, also 1408.
Oh wow!
So yeah, he's been around a while, man, doing a lot of cool stuff. He was cinematographer on five films.
You know, now that you mention it, Bill, this film does have like a similar kind of look to Phantasm. I would say I could see the connection between those two.
Gotcha. That's cool. Because yeah, I didn't see it, yeah. So I'm sorry.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I thought I had.
Yeah, that's okay. It was directed by, and it was, maybe I was surprised because it was directed by someone who I generally don't like his stuff. It's Danny Steinman, who was using a pseudonym because apparently the film didn't turn out as he wanted it to. But he's the guy who did Savage Streets and Friday the 13th Part 5. And I'm like, I don't have a lot of love for those movies.
Gotcha.
But I'm like, man, it's like, why did he... Maybe, you know, this film looks so much different than those other films is that it has me wondering if some producer was standing over his shoulder helping him, quote unquote, with the film, because it looks so different. The tone's so much different and it's just a cleaner piece of cinema than his other stuff in terms of, you know, editing and just cinematography and just the overall handling of it, I think. So I was really impressed with it. So yeah, if you can find it, by all means, check it out. I was quite surprised.
That's cool, man. That is cool. I was wondering when you said 1980, I was wondering if you were like, holy crap, he just saw the movie I did. I mean, of all the 8 million movies. But my next one's from 1981, and I went on this little binge of Hong Kong horror recently, and one of them that came up is Corpse Mania. And as soon as I read the title, it's like, I'm laughing. This thing's going to be a joke. It's going to be a riot. And it wasn't. It was a dramatic horror mystery. And I was thinking, like, why did they name it this? But it's really interesting. It came out in 1981. But I don't think it was released in the United States until, like, 2008.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah. But it Ni Ten, who I think, you know, some movie watchers might know, she's in it as Madame Lan. And it's about a necrophiliac killer. He's murdering prostitutes at this one brothel. And man, talk about cinematography. I'm like watching this thing, and the cinematography by Sinye Lee was really, really beautiful. The color was rich. It sometimes had a real noir feel to it. And the only thing, I gave it 3.5 stars that was like maybe... you know, not up to snuff with some of the special effects. Because of, you know, just certain things. But most of it was really, really solid. And so I start watching this thing and I'm ready to, like, you know, laugh and, like, probably fast forward and turn it off. And I'm like, oh, man, this is really interesting. It's really cool. I really enjoyed it. It had that great flavor. Like I said, it had, like, a noir feel to it. There was a mystery and... Part of the reason that I love watching movies like this is to see like the culture of that particular country at the time as it's represented in film. So it was really cool to see how like, you know, Hong Kong officials were, you know, approaching this thing, because it begins with someone who rents a house, which is really wild. I wish I had like something about the background of it, because once they opened up the gate to this shut out house, once they got in, it was like a world within the house. Like, it was just really crazy. And the set design, I was like, how many days did it take him to make this look so run down? And it was like going into a haunted house with cobwebs, and it was just so like heavy. And then there's this, and the lighting was beautiful in this thing. And it's like, what's that bright spot over there? Oh, it's a corpse in a bed. It's like, and it's like, man, they just did some really, really cool stuff. It wasn't, they had, they didn't have necessarily a red herring, but they did have some shifts in the story that you might not expect. It was like reading a great mystery. And I just really highly recommend it because it was such a blast. And I really love it. The stills from it are really cool too, because they just, again, that cinematography was just on. But the story was really solid. It was cool. It had an intriguing, like almost like cold ending, which I thought was great. And the performances were solid. Really watched because the transfer I saw, and I got this on Netflix, the transfer was beautiful.
Oh, okay.
And right. Yeah, because I expected some grainy, crappy, just from the title, Corpse Mania, you know, it's just like, you know, and it wasn't that at all. And I was like, this is like serious shit. And it was. So if you want a good mystery, mysterious horror from Hong Kong, 1981, about a necrophiliac, and I know that you do, this is the one to watch.
Bill, so you got that through Netflix DVD?
Yeah, I did, because I do both, because sometimes, you know, they have the DVD, and they don't have the stream. Plus, I like to get any behind-the-scenes footage that I can, and, you know, this one, unfortunately, didn't have it, but it was cool to watch.
Yeah. No shame in using Netflix discs, Bill. I actually just put one in the mail today, so I still got mine too.
I put two in the mail.
You know what? Because when you said the title and when I asked the question, I was like, yeah, that doesn't sound like something they would have on streaming.
Yeah, but they really should, because I was really impressed. Of all the Hong Kong horror movies I've seen over the past like couple of weeks, this was the best. Really enjoyed
That's cool, man. Yeah. I wonder if Dave Kay's seen that, because I know he's on an Asian film binge this year. So
he might have. Yeah. He probably owns it. Or he probably like, yeah, I've owned it for 15 years and I haven't watched it.
Still in the shrink wrap.
Dave Kay! All the way, baby.
Okay. So I'm going to go mainstream with my next movie.
Ooh.
So Billy went kind of obscure there, and you know, I watched this recently. It was a blind buy at a Kino Lorber sale, and I was surprised at how much I liked this. I was around when it was released to theaters back in 1998.
Oh.
And I kind of wrote it off, because I was just like, the trailers made it look really silly. And it is kind of silly. And now that I've watched it, I kind of love it because it's silly. And it's the film Deep Rising.
Deep Rising.
It's a creature feature set on a cruise ship.
Oh, with Treat Williams.
Yes, yes.
And Famke Janssen. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's got a really fun character actor cast for the time. It's got those two, Anthony Held, Kevin J. O'Connor, Wes Studi, Jamon Hounsou's in the film, who was fresh off of Amistad, I believe, at the time.
Wow, what a step down.
Hey, well, he showed up in Constantine too, Bill.
I love Constantine. I'll fight you on that. We'll do a show on it.
I actually like Constantine too, but yeah, this movie was just, I popped it in, not really like on a Sunday afternoon, thinking, okay, this will just be something stupid to watch. I probably won't like it. And just like almost as soon as it started, like the way the characters are going back and forth with each other and the dialogue, you know, Treat Williams is like playing a mercenary who's, or he's just like sort of a transport for mercenaries. Mm-hmm. So he's taking this group of badasses, you know, headed by Wes Studi, to this location because they want to rob this cruise ship. Well, the cruise ship winds up being overtaken by some awful Cthulhuian creature that, you know, rises up from the depths, you know, and basically turns everybody, all the guests on the ship into chum. So by the time they get there, it's basically like this big bloody carnage fest, and they're trying to figure out what's going on, but it's really fun and fast paced. I really loved what the film did. The CGI actually surprisingly mostly holds up in this film. There's a lot of CG, but there's also a lot of practical stuff, which I believe I'm trying to think of if Rob Bottin did the
Rob Bottin,
and I'm the one who told you to pronounce it the other way when we did the show about him. Okay.
I didn't know how to pronounce his name until I saw the stuff on the Blu-ray when they were talking about him. And I was like, oh, that's how you say it.
Yeah. I think he was either responsible for the creature design or some of the effects or both. But the creature is pretty cool looking. The film's got a great sense of humor about it. You know, Treat Williams, I feel like, is kind of an underrated character actor.
He disappeared, man. Where is he?
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing now. I mean, he was doing a lot of direct-to-video stuff for a time, like back in the 90s, you know. Yeah. And you know, he's great. And, you know, Famke Janssen, I got to say, the more I see her in movies, the more I admire her. And, I mean, outside of the obvious that she's beautiful and very easy on the eyes, she just seems to have this kind of sense of humor about, yeah, I'm this like beautiful woman, but I'm not afraid to get goofy, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Which tells me that she kind of feels comfortable.
Oh yeah,
you know, kind of embracing roles like her role in Deep Rising or even House on Haunted Hill, which I think she's great in. In a different kind of way, she's kind of playing up her femme fatale persona there. So yeah, I just think Deep Rising is a whole ton of fun. It really exceeded my expectations. This is a film I could see myself returning to just when I want to watch something and just have a good time. So I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. So,
well, I'm going to have a good time tonight because I just found pictures of Famke Janssen dressed as a dominatrix. So,
oh, nice.
Damn, yeah. Anyway,
are you going to print those out and tape them to the ceiling of your bedroom,
Bill? Shh. Anyway, holy crap. Damn. No, I have to watch it again now because like I gave it, you know, 1.5 stars. But now after the way you're talking about it, I need to revisit this thing. So,
yeah, it's not a movie you want your brain switched on for. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well, this one you're going to need your brain switched on for. So there you go. This one was real. I really loved this one for many reasons. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I don't know why it hadn't come up on my radar, but it was had been released in 2019. Little Joe. Are you familiar with it, Johnny?
Oh, is Haas around, Bill?
Son of a bitch. No.
No, I think I've heard the title, but I have not seen it. No.
Yeah, it stars Emily Beecham. She won, I think, at Cannes for her performance in this. Very understated performance. She's a single mother and she's a dedicated senior plant breeder at a corporation. And she's engaged in developing a new species. And she's trying to develop something that will help people cope with, you know, depression and such. A plant that can actually like, you know, just bring like a soothing aroma into the room, so to speak. And it's just really intriguing because she's going through this divorce. She has a kid, and it was written so beautifully. Jessica Hosner directed and she co-wrote it with Geraldine Bajard. And this is the other thing that is really beautiful, man. We talked about cinematography a lot tonight. Yep. This is some of the best cinematography I've seen to help with storytelling and color in a long, long time. And it was by Martin, oh my gosh, Schlacht. And what they did was, like, she would be in the scene talking to somebody and they weren't necessarily on the same page. They were so far apart in the frame that they were almost off of it. And sometimes, you know, it would be filmed like that where there's a conversation going on, but you really can't see anybody because they're sort of like not listening to each other. And this is showing it. So it was just really just extraordinary. And it was absolutely beautiful and poetic. And I love the thematic elements of that. And the story takes on, it gets dark, obviously. It's partly it's a horror sci-fi or even dramatic horror. And it's just really interesting how the story progresses, where it goes, and where and how it ends. And it was one of those, for me anyway, when you shut it off, you're like, shit, what was really going on? What really happened? What happens next? And you'll never know because there's not going to be Little Joe 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's not going to happen. But I think if you like a heady film, if you like an artsy film that looks at horror in a whole different type of way, it's really intriguing what happens and how they present it in the film. And it's really funny because the movie has like a weight to it, like an atmospheric weight. But most of the scenes are in very well-lit areas. And I just, you know, that says so much about how the writing, directing, cinematography, and acting all came together. And I was really impressed by it. I had a lot of fun. I was, like, glued to it. And sometimes, like, nobody would speak for, like, 3 to 5 minutes, you know. But I was, like, couldn't take my eyes off the thing.
Oh, that's powerful then. Yeah, that's really impressive. And you know, Bill, I did pull up the, I guess, poster for the film because when you started talking about it, I was like, this does sound familiar. I'd seen the poster before, and I was like, yeah, I think this is something I should check out. And I didn't get around to it for whatever reason. So now I will look for it thanks to your recommendation.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah. And it has Ben Whishaw in it, who he was Q in the new James Bond movies, and he's also the voice of Paddington, which my girlfriend loves. So, yeah. It's called a hard stare, Billy, and you can't see it because we're just doing audio.
Anyway, watch Little Joe.
Okay, we'll check it out. Did you see that? Was that streaming, Bill, or did you get that on disc?
I'm not sure. Might have even rented that on streaming. I'm not sure.
Okay, I'll look for it. Yeah. Okay. All right, my next movie, we're going to wind back about, God, has it been 51 years since 1970? Yeah, it has been. Well, this is another movie I blind bought a while back because it stars the lovely Pamela Franklin, who we know from The Legend of Hell House and other stuff. And this is a movie I'd heard about, maybe more so because they remade it a little not too long ago. I think it was in the 2010s sometime. And I was just intrigued kind of by the title and by her presence in it. So I was just like, I'll pick this up and watch it sometime. And it's called And Soon the Darkness.
Oh.
Are you familiar with this one, Bill?
Yeah, I think. Hold on.
Okay.
And Soon the Darkness. I think it's on my list if I haven't watched. Just wait. 1970. Okay.
All right.
This one I haven't seen yet then. And I have to now.
Okay, yeah, it's I wasn't sure what to expect from it. Immediately, it's just it just really caught me because it's these two girls, you know, played by Pamela Franklin and Michelle Dotris, and they're doing like this bicycle tour of the French countryside. So, you know, there's a lot of desolation. You know, we're introduced to them. They're like sitting in a in a small cafe surrounded by people. And it's kind of cool because they leave the cafe and they start biking again. And then there's just all this countryside that's like mostly open, not a lot of houses. So what happens is, you know, they stop in a clearing at one point, and the two girls have a disagreement and get into an argument. And Michelle Dotris's character stays behind while Pamela Franklin continues on with the journey, thinking she'll catch up, you know, she'll cool down and catch up later. But she never does. And what happens is Pamela Franklin's kind of stuck in this situation of trying to figure out what happened to her friend. You know, and there's very few people, I guess very few characters in this film. And there's some great moments where Pamela Franklin stops in like just a nearby residence and the people speak hardly any English and they don't translate it in subtitle form in the movie, which I really liked.
Yeah.
Because, okay, you're kind of isolated. There's not a lot of people around and you don't speak the language very well. And you're trying to find out information and you're just like kind of running into a wall here, which makes things feel even more dire before you get, you know, evidence that they might be really, really dire. So I really like that about the film. It's got a great look to it. You know, again, we're talking about cinematography a lot tonight. I love how they film the girls on bikes, you know, just traveling down these desolate roads, and the way director Robert Fuest, who is probably most well known for The Abominable Dr. Fibes.
Yeah.
The way he captures sort of like the shifting of the sun in the sky and how that affects the shadows of things. So you get that sense of time passing. And the other thing I love about this movie is how Pamela Franklin just seems to be going back and forth between these two locations for most of the runtime. And it feels like she's not making any progress. And you start to feel like you're going crazy alongside of her. You know, it's like, what is, you know, really what the hell is going on in this movie? And I really enjoyed that. Like I said, this is another one, like The Unseen, that kept me on the hook the whole time. And I thought it was extremely well done. I made it my header photo. Nice. On Twitter and Facebook, so that's where my header photo is from right now.
Franklin. Oh.
Yeah, and she didn't, you know, she kind of didn't do a lot of movies. But,
she retired
early.
She started a family, and she was like, I'm out.
Good for her, you know. Yeah. I mean, I know. It'd be like, damn, I wish Pamela Franklin would, you know, would have done more stuff because she did have such a presence, I think. And, you know, she's beautiful, but she's also smart, you know, very plays these very intelligent, vulnerable characters as well. You know, they're these very flawed, very human characters. And I think that's another thing that's really striking and really, you know, kept me with this movie for the whole time. So yeah. And nice. Soon The Darkness, check it out.
I have to find it.
Yeah, I'll loan it to you next time I see you, Bill.
Oh, yay. That better be soon too. I was thinking of the remake because I was going to watch it because Carl Urban's in it, but that got really crappy reviews.
Yeah. A part of me, I have it on my Netflix. I'm probably going to check it out just to see how bad it is, but you know, and I like Carl Urban, so
yeah,
we'll see. But I really have serious doubts it could be as good as the original. So
yeah, well, boy, there's no segue for what I'm going to bring up.
oh boy, I like it.
Yeah, well, this one was a surprise in all the best of ways. It's listed as a comedy horror. From Japan, 2019, and it's called One Cut of the Dead.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I've seen this.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Man. So, you're laughing already. Things go bad for this hack director while shooting a low-budget zombie movie when real zombies show up. It is one of the most interestingly laid out films horror movies I had ever seen. As you know, it's very meta.
Yeah.
It's meta times two in many ways. It was really interesting because there's a lot of interesting things about it. And the cool thing is, and it looks amazing, the budget was only $25,000. And it made $25 million. So it's like the, you want to call it like Japan's Blair Witch. There you go.
There you go.
But the first part of the film, the first 37 minutes, filmed in one take. They actually had to do six tries. The second one was perfect, but a crew member had screwed up. And the weird thing is that the actors actually initially, because they did get money later, paid to be in the movie because this was part of a workshop. And I know everything that I'm saying is like, this is a piece of shit. Why should I watch it? Because it isn't a piece of shit. It's fun. It's cool. It's fantastic. After that first 37 minutes, when this movie does some bizarro maneuver and you're like, what? Wait, am I? Did it end? And you're doing something like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm not drinking. What the fuck's going on? And it was so cool. I was just sitting there like agape for like an hour and a half, and just like, this is so freaking cool what they did, and it's beautiful, and it was in its own very special way. And it was just inspiring in tons of ways. One Cut of the Dead by director Shinichiro Ueda. I fucked that up so bad. Forgive me. And
It's okay, Bill.
yeah, and he wrote it as well. And I was like, but I want to find out more. Like, did he just write that first 37 minutes and they did this bizarro thing on top of it? Because what they did was just incredible when you think about the logistics of it, you know? And it's like the planning, and I really want to know more about this movie because it's one of those films that I'm going to rewatch and I'm going to have to determine, is it 4 out of 5 stars or more? Definitely not less for me. I don't know. What did you think of it, man?
Yeah, I watched this a couple of years ago when when it premiered on Shudder, and I'm with you, Bill, and I think everybody who watched this movie had the same initial reaction to those first 37 minutes. I was like, oh my God, this is like the worst. What the hell is this? This is the worst thing I've ever seen. It's like inept. It's like the perspective shifts, without any explanation. There's a camera where a camera shouldn't be, but it's all this stuff that's like you're just like sitting there judging it, it's like, this doesn't make any sense. What the hell is this? And then it, like you said, Bill, it turns into something else. And I just, I found it greatly affecting. It was like very funny, but also kind of moving in a way, I think.
Oh
And
yeah, that was the cool thing about it. As it's going on, it's like the emotion shift and all too. Not like there's not like a jolt in regard to like it's not some jarring switch in tone, but it was just like the movie got deeper as it got more meta. And you're like, man, it's like, holy shit. And when it was over, I was like, I almost applauded in my own home. It was great.
I think it's kind of one of those things that, came out at a time when, we were in the midst of, He Who Shall Not Be Named's administration. And I think it was sort of like this shot of like, there's something hopeful and something just kind of strangely wholesome and innocent about the whole thing too, I think. In a way that's really endearing. I love the moment where the director just pops out of the door and yells, "Action!" That's like my favorite moment in that movie.
It's fucking brilliant. It was like, and if anyone tried to copy this, they would just don't. Like, I don't even know how he did it. I would have loved to have been sitting on a hill watching him do this madness.
Yeah, actually, Mark Hoffmeyer at Movies, Films, and Flicks, he was going on about it. Like he said, it was his favorite film of a couple years back, and I think that's how I wound up watching it, because I was like, well, if he's saying that, I'd better check this out. And And I was like, you know, it wasn't my favorite, but I definitely liked it a lot. So I was glad that I stuck with it. Yeah.
Yeah, so did I, because I'm like, what the hell is this crap? And I'm like, oh, you know, it's like, wow. And I think I was up for a couple hours afterwards because I was all like hyped and stuff.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Bring it, Johnny. Bring it.
Well, my next movie, sort of continuing on the slimy creature from Deep Rising, is another movie I watched for the first time, and I asked myself, why has it taken me so long to watch this masterpiece of cinema? It's Charles Band's Parasite. Bill, have you seen Parasite?
The original with Demi Moore?
Not the Oscar-winning one from a couple years back.
I'm talking about the original with Demi Moore, right?
Yes, the one with Demi Moore.
Oh, saw that a million years ago, yep.
Oh, did you see it in the theater, man?
No, I didn't. I saw it on VHS, and I know Palco Designs would be thrilled with that.
I wonder what Palco thinks of this movie.
I'm sure he owns it on VHS. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, he needs to do one of those Twitter posts where he just shows us the picture of his beat up copy of Parasite. You know, Bill, I wasn't expecting much from this. It was an early 80s 3D, you know, movie, and a lot of that early 80s 3D was total shit. I watched it in 2D, so I was just not expecting much of this movie. It starts off very strange and random and just proceeds to get even more strange and random as it goes along. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing. The scientist, played by the very Jeff Goldblum-esque Robert Glaudini.
Yep, exactly.
You know, he's carrying this parasite he's created inside his body because he's trying to... it almost doesn't make sense. It almost doesn't really matter what I say about this movie, because it's basically feels like just one thing after another that they decided the day they shot it. But it's so endearing. It's like one of those post-apocalyptic films. You got the badass punks, you know, who kind of are assholes at first, but then later on they become like allies with the scientists and stuff. I like these little things that the film did, because it wasn't just like a cynical, nihilistic film at the end of the day. Right. I think it had some ambition behind it, and I love sort of the seedy government guy who drives around in a black Cadillac trying to catch up with Robert Glaudini. And I like the fact that one of the punks, played by Luca Bercovici, he's talking about like how he came from the quote-unquote suburbs, which is the suburbs have apparently been turned into concentration camps or something like that. There's all these little things in the script that I really like that are just alluded to, but they kind of tease at this greater world. But at the same time, I was like, I don't need to see that greater world because I'm imagining it right now. So I just really love this sense of propulsion with this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, Demi Moore makes a great, I guess this was her debut performance.
Her debut. Yep.
Her debut. And, you know, I must give her credit because she says like some of the most ridiculous dialogue with a totally straight face on this movie.
Yeah. I remember that. I'm like, what the hell? I think I might've watched this on HBO back in the 80s.
I could see them putting that on at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah,
probably did. Yep.
Yeah. But I just had a lot of fun with it. The effects are pretty cool. Stan Winston was part of the effects team. Sherry Curie from The Runaways is in the movie. Yeah. And so is Rainbow Smith, for like 2 seconds. I just had a ball with this movie, and it's only 85 minutes. So it's like really fast paced. Like if there were no credits, you know, with this movie, I would have assumed it was a Roger Corman movie because it really runs with that sense of low budget efficiency. And I'm kind of discovering that Charles Band kind of has a similar sort of rhythm when he makes movies, which I like. I don't like these big bloated, I'm going to get on my soapbox. I don't like big bloated movies anymore. I would just rather, why stretch something to 2 hours when you can do it in an hour and 20 minutes? You know, just like efficiency scores points with me these days. And I just really, this movie is again one that caught me and gripped me in this very strange mood night. Totally loved it. So,
well, I have to watch it again. I know it's streaming. I'm not sure if it's on, it's probably on Prime.
Yeah.
I have to check. I almost watched it the other night, actually. And, but, yeah, I'll definitely add that to my list again, because I haven't seen it in a long, long, long time.
And, you know, it's like, if you like Alien ripoffs, you know, it's a fun little Alien ripoff. That's what I would say about it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, it's my last movie of the night, and I just, like, plucked them, so I didn't plan the order. And this is another weird one. it's actually an adventure comedy horror fantasy. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it because it was like, this is so freaking inane. This is so fucking ridiculous. But the acting's great. The cinematography, the set design is friggin' phenomenal. And I couldn't take my eyes off of it. And that's Bill Watterson's. He co-wrote this with Stephen Sears. Dave Made a Maze.
Oh my God! I have not seen it. I've heard very divisive things about
this
movie.
Yes, I'm sure you have. And I'm watching this, going, I love it. And everybody I know is like, "What a piece of shit!" You know? So it's about this guy named Dave, played by Nick Thune, who's an artist. And he hasn't done anything. He hasn't completed a friggin' project, you know. And I know like a million people like this. I think we all do.
Oh, yeah.
So he hasn't done anything. So he's like sort of like having a mind bend. And he decides to build this fort in his living room just like out of like pure anxiety and tension. And it's like this, it's the most advanced like friggin' fort you've ever seen in your life. It makes no sense. And he's trapped inside of it. He's lost. He can't get out. And so, and his friends are like, well, okay, he's lost his mind. Let's just go into this thing that's only about, I don't know, 15 feet long and get him out. And he's like, no, don't come in. There's booby traps. And I'm like, this is like an inverse Pee-wee's Playhouse. And I'm like, what's going on? So his friends are like, dude, you lost your mind. His girlfriend's like, what the hell? So the friends, of course, go in. And when they go in, here's the fantasy part. This thing is massive. It is endless. It is, but it is cardboard everywhere. Everything that happens is like cardboard related. If someone gets their head chopped off, there's like a fan behind them blowing up streamers of red and shit. And it's like, I'm laughing my ass off. I thought it was a blast. I thought it was cool. It was great physical comedy. It was a great visual comedy. The set designers busted their ass. I can't imagine how many people who worked on this thing. Who's the set designer? Art direction was by Jeff White. Jeff, you killed it. the art department is a mile long. Because they had puppets. They had all this crazy shit. It was like being a kid with a gruesome imagination, but not being able to imagine things at an adult level. So you're keeping it in like paper mache land, and you're like, oh, everything's cardboard. Holy shit, that can kill. It's like, yeah. So I'm just like, I loved it. The sound was great. It looked beautiful. If you hated it and you want to, I don't know. But I just fucking, dude, you got to see this. We got to talk about it.
Bill, I was going to say, did you stream this or is this a disc on Netflix? I'll look for it.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know if I had a disc and they didn't have like a like behind the scenes thing, I would have cried. So I don't remember crying. So it might have been streamed.
I was going to say, you know, Bill, I think for what it's worth, I know Arrow, at least in the UK, put this movie out, and Arrow is pretty prestigious. So they must have seen something in this movie to say, "Yeah, we're gonna put this out." Yeah,
yeah, it was so different from what not only what I expected, but from like you know from anything. You know, it was like One Cut of the Dead. It was like, what are they doing? And I'm like, that's what I'm looking for. Because if oh my God, I You wouldn't. It takes me 45 minutes to find a shitty movie on Prime and Netflix. I'm not even looking at any of the other streaming services.
Oh yeah,
I'd be there forever. And it's all the same thing. A young family goes, fuck that. I've seen that a million times. A priest, an angry priest, fuck that too. And you're like, you know, it's just, I'm sick of all of this crap. So here's somebody, you know, Bill Watterson and his co-writer Steven Sears are like, no, man, we got to do something different. So I'm celebrating all of that, and I love it. It was a blast. It wasn't that I loved it for something different's sake. I think they told a cool story. I thought it was a blast, imaginative, inventive. I mean, it like One Cut of the Dead. It's like I wish I had
thought of that,
you know. So
yeah, I'll try and find it and check it out, Bill, because I'm curious about it, and I just like I hadn't heard anybody talk about it for a long time, so I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, it came out in 2017. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
Damn.
And it earned it. It wasn't a gift, you know. Like One Cut of the Dead, it wasn't like, yeah, here's 4 stars. No, man. If you're taking a chance, if you're going against the tropes, fighting the grain, and like not wanting to put out the same bullshit over and over again like so many of these other idiots do, it's great. Yeah. And both of those movies, they definitely weren't over-stylized in any way, shape, or form. I love it. The same with Little Joe. I mean, that was so weird. And I want weird, man. I want May. I want Angela Bettis. You know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. So.
No, absolutely. No, I think it's like, you know, making something good weird that's a skill. Making something weird for weird's sake is not. I think, you know, to put in that extra work to make the weirdness endearing, that's what's going to sort of puncture through our veil of cynicism here. And
It has to resonate. It has to have meaning. You can't just, like you said, be weird for weird's sake. That's as bad as being, staying on point with a horror film with all the tropes just for doing it. It's like, it's just stupid. I watched Under the Silver Lake last night and I enjoyed the ride, and it's like, there's more to uncover. I probably have to watch that film a few more times. And now that I'm reading more behind it, I'm appreciating it even more. So.
Wow. Maybe I need to rewatch that one, 'cause I did not like that movie at all.
I knew you were going to say that. And we'll talk about that. If that was a horror, I'd be bringing that up tonight. But
no, I'm sure you would. Well, Bill, the last movie I have, and I'm gonna bring us out tonight, it's one that we can both talk about.
Ooh.
Because you, I swear, I think since in the early days of me knowing you and knowing that you liked horror, you recommended this movie to me, and finally last night I got around to watching it.
Oh, no.
And it is Low, L-O, from writer director Travis Betts.
Holy crap, you don't know. I'm cutting in right now. You don't know the hell I was going through to try and find that damn movie on DVD for you. And I was going to get myself a copy, and it was like, I can't afford to take a loan out of the bank to get this for either one of us.
Oh shit. Because I was actually going to go on Amazon and see if it was, or just see if anybody had it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my last search was like, and that's when I contacted, your beloved, and like, help me, give me ideas. Oh, Johnny Low. Holy shit.
And this I got through Netflix discs, so you can still get it through there. So, hey, get your disc subscription on if you want to watch Low.
Yeah, I'm sorry I lost it. You know, I got my copy now. No, don't do that. Don't hate me, Netflix.
But, you know, this movie was, you know, I think you kind of sold it to me, Bill, as kind of like you compared it to Dogville, I think, the Lars von Trier film.
Really? I did? Was I drinking? Was I on?
Well, okay. If you didn't, then I must have made that up in my head, because as I was watching it, I was like, it's very minimal set decoration, extremely minimal, and it's basically almost shot like a stage play, I would say. Would you say that's
absolutely
accurate? Yeah,
absolutely, man.
Yeah, and the story's basically, it starts with a guy who's got a, he's within a circle with candles and a pentagram and, you know, all sorts of occult looking stuff. And he's reading from a book that looks like the Necronomicon. And he conjures up this demon called Lo. And what this guy, Justin, played by Ward Roberts, wants is his girlfriend April got snatched by a demon and ostensibly taken to the demon's underworld. So Justin wants to conjure up someone to help retrieve April from, you know, whatever purgatory she's being tortured in. And he gets the lowest of low demons, I guess. It's played by Jeremiah Burkett and in this hilariously phlegmy performance. I just love the guttural sound of his voice throughout its voice throughout the film. It was very funny. It really added to some of the punchlines, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Your dinner. But it was just, you know, it was really fun because at first it's just like, is it just going to be these two, this guy and this demon talking for the whole movie, just exactly. Going back and forth? And then it sort of gives way to some other stuff. And it's just everything that happens is, with the exception of one thing, I sort of saw the ending coming. But that mm-hmm. said, I still really enjoyed the film. Really, like you were talking about, Dave made a maze, Bill. The makeup design is fantastic in this film. Really creative, really, I don't want to call it like something out of a children's book, but some of it's kind of like almost something you'd expect to see out of a YA fantasy thing.
Yeah.
But it's dark at the same time, and it's dealing with sort of Justin coming to terms with, well, what really was his relationship with April? You know, what did it all mean, kind of? And I think I like that bit of introspection. You know, it was more like we're fond of saying, it was more character based.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Rather than anything else. And the concepts, I think, were really well rendered through just mm-hmm. kind of simple means. There's like a moment where two characters are silhouetted behind a sheet with a red light on it. And they're talking about all the tortures they've endured, in the underworld or whatever. And it's just very effective stuff done through, you know, dialogue and vision, you know, pretty simple visuals. Mm-hmm. You know, the performances are fantastic.
Sarah Lizay.
Yeah. And she was in Jawbreaker, right?
She was
I forget her character's name, but she was in that Greg Araki movie Nowhere. I know that much.
Yeah, she was Egg in Nowhere. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Egg.
She's
Egg.
One of my all-time favorites, and she hasn't done anything since 2015.
Oh, that's a drag.
That's a sin, man. She did The Wicked Within, The Dead Inside too, which I love, and Mad Cowgirl.
I still gotta see Mad Cowgirl. Oh, that's another one I still gotta see.
She's something special, and I thought Lo was great because of its minimalism and how much they got from that. Like you said, it was like a stage play, and it was just so cool to, you know, the banter, mm-hmm. which was great, and the end result. I really enjoyed it, and it was great to see something so entertaining for like 90 minutes when it is pretty much, you know, two people talking. And
I was thinking, Bill, like what you said, or what I was saying about One Cut of the Dead, how it was kind of affecting in the end. You know, there was like this swell of emotion, you know, and I kind of felt in a different way, granted, but at the end of Low, I kind of felt that similar swell of emotion, only it's more of like an oh kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of it's pretty melancholy, I think. But mm-hmm. but yeah, no, it was a, you know, that's a film that's always stuck in my head, you know, is one to see because you spoke so highly of it. So I'm glad I finally got a chance to see it. And I hope some reputable boutique label snatches it up and gives it a re-release since it's not available.
Well, it is available, but the,
for $1,000.
No, it was much higher before, but now you can get it new from like, you know, $22 to $34, and it's like, it's a regular DVD, it's not a Blu-ray, and it's like, and we're reaching that point where it's like, eh,
Yeah. Well, I was thinking when I popped in the disc, I was like, yeah, this definitely seems like a disc from 2009. It's just like play and chapters, and there was no special features or anything like
I
that, so.
know, and I want to see special features, especially with Sarah in it,
Yeah, I would love to see what they did behind the scenes and how they put all that stuff together,
Yeah, because
as well, so.
I think that's the point of it. Like, I loved it because it's like I don't even know what the budget was for this film, but it had to be very low.
Yeah.
And oh, thank you. Good
Oh.
night. I did that by a complete accident. And it's low, LO, no W on that if you're looking for it. And it was just great because I love the minimalism, and it's like, how do you make it work? And it's great because it's like, well, we have no bells and whistles outside of this demon, what he looks like. So, man, the writing's got to be great,
Yeah.
and that's it. Because if you don't have great writing, you don't have a great movie. I don't care how great the special effects are, James Cameron, and and I'm sorry, did I say that? And that's pretty much it. Michael Bay, it's like, wow, look at the explosion. No, that's why I love Michael Bay, because when he mocked himself in a commercial, he's blowing everything up in it. I'm like, cool. He's self-deprecating, and it's like, now I could appreciate the guy. And it's funny because Anchor Bay Entertainment, and sometimes I see him produce stuff that it's like doesn't have his signature on it, but it's like, okay, he knows what good stuff is,
Right.
So I appreciate that. But yeah, that movie was a blast. I really loved it. Comedy, fantasy, horror.
Yeah, it's a lot, and it's really creatively done, and I think it's creative, perhaps, whereas Dave Made a Maze was minimal in the special effects department. There was a lot of effort that went into it, and I think that was the same case with this. It very much feels like a handcrafted labor of love, for sure.
Yeah, and it's really cool when someone's like, really, we can make this work, and they care about quality. And we saw that with One Cut of the Dead too. And it's just really cool to see that love and passion and everybody getting on board to make it work. Because man, if no one's on board, that thing's not gonna work. And
Well, and Bill, I know you've suffered through a lot of crappy low budget movies where it's just like, hey, we can make a movie, and it's like every other movie, only much, much worse.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh yeah, it's yeah. Oh yeah, let's have a shower scene in our movie. No! No shower scene. Don't do it, man.
If you do have a shower scene, close up on the guy's cock instead of the girl's tits. That would be something we haven't seen before.
Wow, Johnny. Wow. Now
I'm
you're
just saying.
num Wow. Man, is it that time, Johnny?
I think so, Bill. I'm getting loose with my tongue, as they say. So go
Well, we don't want you to lose that next.
ahead.
Sorry. All right, beautiful people. We're doing scream outs, and these are for people on Twitter. I'm going to let you know who they are, going to give you their tag, tell you a little bit about them, and we're going to go, go, go. So the first one is the Show and Flop Podcast. And you could find them on Twitter at Show and Flop Cast, a podcast where, and these are also Twitter handles, David M. Wein, Wein, and Killing You Guy, do a deep dive into canceled manga, okay? Join our Discord. They're on Discord, so you can find them there. They're out of New York. So how cool is that? All right, so check them out. They're very cool. A woman who is just absolutely wonderful. I had the pleasure of meeting her in person several years ago at Shriek Fest. I really loved her. I love her spirit, her vitality. The lovely Brooke Lewis, LA. She's an actress, producer, and philanthropist. My gosh, she's with the Sinatra Club on Netflix, Kinky Killers, Showtime, I Murders on Stars. Definitely check out her IMDb page, and also her website, Brooke, and this is Brooke with an E, Brooke Lewis, LEWIS.com. Absolutely amazing woman. She's fantastic. Z Budget Director, and that is the Twitter handle and everything else. Writer, director, and new Elsa Pablanco. That's also a Twitter handle right there. Webcomic Decay out now. It's just $1.99. And you can find it at payhip.com. And actually, you can even email zbudgetdirector.gmail.com for more. A very cool soul. And speaking of cool souls, Shonda. Who is Shonda? Shonda is LDY3LU. She's into metal rock. They're her music choices. But I'll also listen to anything that feeds my soul. Crank it up! She's also a horror fan. Scare me, she says. Johnny and I are scary on our own way. But she's a great supporter of the show. Love the hell out of her. She's amazing. So please follow her. LDY3LU. Chris Mentillo. Who's that? That's Doc Mentillo. And that's T-I-L-L-O. New York Times best-selling horror writer, horror producer, true crime television, journalist, actor. Related to President Thomas Jefferson. Holy crap. Entrepreneur out of Boston. That's all you need to know. And that's Doc Mentillo. The Screening Space. I know Johnny.
Yay!
Screening underscore space on Twitter. The Screening Space is a place to chat about all forms of entertainment featuring celebrity interviews, movie and TV series, news and reviews. Go to the-screening-space.com for more. And I'm trying to come up with an idea. I feel bad. Sue's going to kill me. I know it.
You can do it, Billy.
I'm trying! Larson. Who's Larson? Larson on Twitter is at my choice is 666. It's better to be feared than loved. And fuck you, Jeff Bezos. He's out of Brooklyn, New York. The wonderful Mr. Blue Lou Boyle. Cult films and heavy metal music. He's in the Sunshine State. How beautiful is that? Mr. Blue, man, I think we've been following each other since 2013. So very cool soul. Another very cool soul. Beautiful persona. Phoenix Fiery 7. Yep. Talent acquisition. Horror writer, editor, script to screen development. I think she's out of West New York, which is really, really cool. Free Will Writers Asylum. And she's a creative soul, an asylum sister, and she's nocturnal. And you could check out her stuff at phoenixfiery.wordpress.com. And last but not least, I mean, everybody's a cool soul. All these people are really cool. This is Patrick Horaholic, and you could find him at Lord's Prayer 6, computer science, mutant fan, family, horror fam, killer clown, drum life. Also loves Shudder. He's a Shudder addict, and... The Last Drive-In will never die. He didn't say The Last Knock, but The Last Drive-In.
We most definitely will die at some point.
Yeah. And Johnny mentioned A Fiend on Film, Dave Kay. Love that guy. And, of course, we always mention, you know, Mr. Greg Palko at PalkoDesigns.com. So that's it, Johnny. Those are scream outs.
All right, Bill. Good scream outs as always. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, but there are B's in the Numbs. And you can also find my writing at Crash Palace because Billy's a nice guy. And you can also find my writing at The Screening Space, which Billy mentioned in the Scream Outs. So
yes. Awesome.
There you have it. What about you, Bill? What's up?
You could find me on Twitter at Crash Palace for all the horror stuff, and you could find me on Twitter at Noir Kink for the Kink Noir Crime Thriller series, and on CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show, Johnny's writing, and much more. Sue Layton, all that cool stuff. Great souls. And you could also find this show on Spotify, iTunes, and about 30 other places I don't even know. We're everywhere. We're like a virus. But you don't need a mask when it comes to us. So that's it, Johnny.
That's good, Bill. Yeah.
All right. Then we're out.
All right. See ya.
All right, bud. Bye.